Signs of the Southland, Monday, May 22nd. Mr. Purdy, everyone's favorite baseball playoff series is back for the regular season. It's Dodgers, it's Barbs. I can feel the existential dread coursing through my
Oh man.
very veins.
We're just racing to get this done so we can catch Freddie Freeman's first at bat. I know that's why we're doing this 20 minutes before get pitch first pitch.
Could you imagine? Do you imagine a world where Charlie Morton, Jason Hayward, and Freddie Freeman are going to be playing on the same baseball field, but only
Yeah.
one of them is wearing a Barb's cap, and that one of them is not Jason Hayward or Freddie Freeman?
I think Hayward would have been the running favorite of the three of them in the
Noted
back.
homer hitter on for in first at bat, Jason
That
Hayward.
I'm told that's still the loudest moment in Turner Field history is that home run.
To be fair, the last couple of years of that stadium were particularly quiet, and I would know. I was once one of like 8,000 people to show up for a game there. So,
Oh no. I managed to go to like the final series against the Tigers. We made sure to at least get in the building one more time. Yeah.
think I have a printed ticket from that. I thought I bought on eBay. I was
You
gonna make
might
a
have.
nice like display of like the old stadium, like the program from the last series. The ticket and everything, because I gave away like a commemorative ticket, and then a program from the first series, and then they like a commemorative ticket from that, and then but that was literally 6 years ago.
You got time.
And
They haven't gotten rid of picture frames in that time span.
oh, Amazon has tried, let me tell you. Oh my God, that is not something that we need to get into. But what we do need to get into today to start is talking about the ACC Baseball Championship that is starting tomorrow, technically, time-wise. But today, when this gets released at Durham Bulls Baseball Park or Athletic Park, I don't even know what they call it anymore. It's DBAP. Georgia Tech is the 11th seed in Pool B, with UVA as the 2 and UNC as the 7. Here is your schedule: one game a day for 3 days, all starting at 3 p.m. Georgia Tech UNC on Tuesday the 23rd, Georgia Tech UVA on Wednesday the 24th, and then UNC versus UVA in the rubber match on the 25th. The important note of all of this: if you do not remember how the ACC championship for baseball works, again, every podcast is someone's first. The higher seed advances in the case of any ties. So for Tech to advance to the semis, basically in any way, shape, or form, it has to win both of its games versus UNC and then versus UVA. Will it do that? Yeah, that's about the noise that I made too. Do they have to win the tournament to make the NCAA field, Mr. Purdy? What would you say to that?
I know Jake's fancy schmancy projection thing has always had us kind of in that at large area, although our recent performance has kind of helped and not helped at the same time, losing to some non-con interstate teams, but then also winning the Duke series. Didn't win the UVA series. That didn't really help. I think getting to the final might be the just barely, like maybe that gets it done. I don't know the math in my head well enough, but just thinking of how close we were to the bubble, and then how we didn't exactly win a big RPI game beating UVA. I think if we had gotten one or two of those games, that may have done enough to maybe we win the pool and we're through. My guess is we're still just on the border because we haven't swayed in either direction too super hard yet. And I'm not terribly aware of the national landscape enough to know if any of the teams behind us made a big push in the last week or so. I think
So,
making the final feels like that should get, at least get us there.
here's what I got from D1 Baseball. They noted that after a weekend sweep, Virginia moved from the, in their projections, from the 9 national seed to the 8 national seed, which would mean that they would host a super regional. The last 4 in and the first 4 out do not include Georgia Tech at this time.
Okay.
So it would probably take, at least based on this, and this is not scientific, this is just prognostication from one of our fellow media outlets. It's possible that to get an at-large bid, well, it's possible that to get an NCAA tournament bid, period, they would need to win the tournament.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously the best way of guaranteeing yourself a way in.
The good thing is, though, is everyone we have to face in front of us to get to that point are all good teams. So there's a lot of, so if you, in the case that we beat UVA and UNC and then whoever we get in the semifinal, if we happen to win all three of those games, those were three very, very good wins in a row. So
Yeah,
it's,
so
that's a,
just
that's
to
a,
kind
that'd
of,
be a big bump that we haven't had at all this year in a big way.
so contextualizing that, UVA is obviously a national seed, the 8 national seed in the projection. North Carolina is a 2 seed in the Stanford region in the projection. The A region is, or the B pool is paired with the, I think it's the A pool for the purposes of the semifinals. Okay, so that pool is Wake, Notre Dame, and Pitt. Wake is probably a one, right? The no one
They're
national
the,
seed.
yep.
And so,
So we have to
yeah.
beat basically two top 10 teams to even hold a candle.
Yeah, but if you can beat, I think the flip side of that coin, despite me being, the analytics guy, is the flip side of that coin is you beat two, at least two top 10 teams and
That's big.
one top 50 team. You probably should make the tournament if you're on a knife's edge. But it kind of comes down to, like you said, if they're on that knife's edge right now, and at least per D1 baseball, they don't. It doesn't look like it. So it's really going to be interesting when we talk this time next week to see what's going on and really what's happened there. A couple of other news items as we wind down the baseball season. Five players were named to the All-ACC set of teams for the first team All-ACC. Steven Reed was a feature in the outfield. Second team All-ACC nominations were Jake DeLeo, Angelo DiSpigna, and Jackson Finley. And the third team and appearing on the All-Freshman team as well was Christian Campbell. Tech put together the fourth most selections in the conference behind Wake at 9. Obviously, Wake is the best team in the country. And Miami and UVA were tied at 7. So, a lot of honors for the offensive output for sure.
Yeah, as
And
it should be.
Jackson Finley obviously was on a watch list for the two-way player awards as
Yep.
well. So he's getting some plaudits on both sides of the game there. And then finally, if you didn't catch it this weekend, Mark Teixeira's number was retired at Russ Chandler Stadium this past weekend. I'm in the final homestand of the season. Really good ceremony. I didn't catch too much of it, but it seemed really nice. It seemed like a really nice moment for someone who's invested a lot of time and energy into that program, and both as a player and then now as a donor. So I think that's it. It's kind of all I have to say about that one. Anything else to add on baseball, Mr. Birdie?
I missed the event, sadly, for Teixeira. My mom was playing in her annual field hockey tournament at the Arizona Soccer Fields on DeKalb Avenue, which had a newly repaved section of road. Can you believe if any of DeKalb Ave got repaved? Because that was the coolest thing I've seen in ages, was a drivable part of DeKalb Avenue.
I wondered for many years if 10th Street would ever be repaved. And somehow, by some margin of God's grace, it did.
I think it was it. No, it was 2021, because I was in Texas for the summer. It wasn't paved, and then I came back, and it was paved. I was very delighted to drive on that road when I came back.
In either case, a true blessing that street absolutely sucked. You mentioned Arizona Ave, which brings a nice segue to the NCAA golf, the men's golf championships that are coming up this week in at Greyhawk Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona. The women's championships, the Division I championships, are finishing up today. I believe they're 1 week ahead. I don't actually know if they're at Greyhawk. I assume they are. Some notables in the full field, some usual suspects, of course, Athens, Duke, Oklahoma, Florida State, Arizona State, North Carolina. I have Duke on here twice for some reason because I can't read my own notes. I also believe that East Tennessee State also made the field, so that's pretty fun
Nice.
to see. No individual golfer in addition to Georgia Tech's main team, so it's basically team play, or well, I guess they could win the individual title, but
Yeah, they could.
yeah,
Yeah.
the focus is on it's not an individual from a team that didn't make it, because obviously Georgia Tech made the final field.
Yep.
Here's your schedule. Round one starts on Friday, May 26th. That and individual and stroke play will go until May 29th. That is Monday. Including the final round of stroke play and going through the championship, all of this stuff will be on the Golf Channel, which I also believe is multi-streamed or simulcast on Peacock. So your final round, like I said, that'll be 5 p.m. on the 29th. That's Monday. Match play quarterfinals will start at noon on the 30th. That's Tuesday. Match play semifinals, 5 p.m. on the 30th, and then the championship final. All of that is match play, 5 p.m. on the 31st, which is Wednesday. I think you said it a couple weeks ago in Slack, and Jake wanted to kill you, but this really is Georgia Tech's best chance at a national championship, in its possibly its best sport
An NCAA
right
national
now.
championship, yes.
An NCAA national championship in
Excluding
its best sport.
the mascot and drone racing championships we've won in the last 2 years.
Which must be celebrated. It has to
Must
be.
be.
We have to remind ourselves.
Also, vote
But
Buzz into the Hall of Fame, mascot Hall of Fame. That's currently happening too.
also that. But yeah, this is in NCAA national championship terms, this is Georgia Tech's best shot.
There's a lot. There's a they're playing super hot. Like they got hot at the right time, and they just knocked the break. They just killed everybody in the last 2 rounds of their regional. I mean, their first day they were kind of getting warmed up. Arkansas had a good day, and they were behind UNC, and then posted record-setting days. I mean, I wrote a tiny recap on our website from thenormalcy.com, and they basically broke their team record for a regional for a single day, and then proceeded to be one shot worse than that the next day, going from a negative
Oh
20.
no. One shot worse than 21 under.
22. They shot 21 on the third day and was 22 on the second round. So yeah, though they were, I hope they didn't just burn all their
You only
good
get
rep
so many
holes.
strokes. You got to budget your strokes.
I know. So no, Connor Howell played well. Christo Lamprecht is just on a tear. He had a round where he was shooting. He shot 10 under. I think that was the day we last recorded. He shot 10 under that day. So with a bogey free 10 under, I'll mind you that. So that's about as efficient golf as you can play.
There was a watch list that he was on that I wanted to mention while we were thinking about it. Oh, here it is. He's on the final watch list for the Haskins Award, which is the nation's top player. So that will be presented along with, or that'll be presented on Tuesday, May 30th. It seems like after the conclusion of the competition,
Gotcha.
then. For that day. So we'll keep an eye out for that as well. Anything else on golf before we move on?
Mean, they're doing really well. If you want to go back a couple episodes, I did to get a chance to interview Connor Howe, who, to spoil some of the interview, basically said, yeah, they thought they could beat anybody, and they know they're good enough. They're also very tall dudes that can just drive the ball far, and they find fairways really well. So, will be some golf I will attempt to tune into while I work.
Let's move on to women's basketball, where there are some roster updates when you say, Mr. Purdy.
Yes, so about, I know, an hour ago-ish, I got an email in my inbox, and we have a new transfer guard from Cincinnati. Her name is Caitlin Wilson. She mainly a three-point shooter, it looks like here. I haven't seen much or heard her name before, but she has hit at least 50 three-pointers in her 3 seasons she spent at Cincinnati and been one of the AAC's leading three-point shooters in terms of three-pointers per game made. She was second 2 years ago and first in her first season 3 years ago at Cincinnati. So, outside shooting threat, which is always nice to have. I know that's been a part that they needed to recruit in because they lost Swartz and Bianca Jackson. They didn't necessarily have any big 3-point specialists left on the roster at this point, so that happened. Oh, I also mentioned that we have not mentioned on the podcast. Carmen Harrison transferred to Belmont, so we are down one person there. That was another guard or guard forward. I think she could play both. So. One
Belmont's a
out, one
really
in.
good women's basketball school, by the way.
Yes.
Tech has had trouble with them in the past. Just to add some statistical stuff to Caitlin Wilson's profile, I pulled up her stats on herhoopstats.com. You're looking at someone that got 1.4 win shares on the season last year. So that's basically your women's basketball version of WAR. Right, wins above replacement, except it's a little bit different. This is just the number of wins that the player produced through their play, not necessarily compared to an average player, but just the amount, the shares of wins that they contributed towards their play. So basically, with her on the court, the Cincinnati's team was added like a win and a half to their win total, or were much better. Offensively, that's worth about one. Defensively, that ended up being about a half. So, still pretty positive. Offensive rating wise, she had a 101.2, and defensive rating wise, she was at a 96.6. So, slightly above average offensively, slightly, and significantly above average defensively as well, because I believe lower is better for defensive rating. And she did all of that in 29 games played, started 10 of those, and put up just under 600 minutes. So I think she's, and compared to her 2021, it looks like she featured a little bit less, was more rotational, more sixth woman off the bench. Still playing a high volume of minutes, just but she got 677 in 2021 compared to 586 in 2022. So I think you're getting a really good contributor here. I'm not a big I basketball stats are a little outside of my comfort zone as an analyst, so I won't comment too much more to and embarrass myself. But just a couple other things. She was usage rate definitely has gone down over the course of her 3 seasons. So like I said, more and more rotational. 24% in that first season at Cincinnati, and then down to 18% that final season. She was shooting a good number of threes. 81% of her shots, including free throw trips, were 3-point attempts. So you're looking at a pretty good shooter. You're looking at someone that prefers to shoot from distance. And also someone that can give you good value, at least for Cincinnati, was really good value off of the bench as well. So that's just a very, very quick, like I literally came up with this on the fly data scouting report. So thanks again to Her Hoop Stats for having that information available, just for us to take a crack at for y'all. Anything else before we take a short break, Mr. Purdy?
Don't think so. Recruiting doesn't open again, I believe, till June or something like that. So they're gonna have some time before some stuff goes down.
I do enjoy the women's basketball accounts and the volleyball accounts. Just like, shh, we can't talk to you. It's a dead period. Graphics on Instagram and other social media. It's very funny to me.
It's helpful. It's helpful.
We'll talk a little bit more about softball, the NCAA tennis tournament, and volleyball right after this short break.
With Section 103, you can also get volleyball shirts. I don't know if they have tennis shirts yet or softball shirts. I'm not as well versed into their inventory as Jake is, but what I do know is that the Junior's Grill design is the best one that they've come up with in a long time. Me and Jake both agree on that. And you can get free shipping for any order over $70 on their website, which is Section, spelled out, section103.com. Their Twitter is also at the same spot. My shirts that I have are very nice. I love my hoodie, although I'm not probably going to wear that until a little bit later because we're finally getting out of the part of Atlanta weather where there's just no random cold days because the random cold days are 70 degrees. So that is that. If you want to go check them out, they are awesome people. They have awesome stuff. It all feels comfortable. It's nice. You can get some athletic wear and get the classic designs or stuff about your favorite sport. So with that, that's Section 103.
Welcome back to Signs in Southland for Monday, May 22nd. Let's talk very briefly about the softball team. Again, we mentioned last week that they got bounced from the ACC tournament. They also did not make the NCAA tournament field. And another reminder from last week, Emmett Kalf, star center, is also planning to grad transfer and has entered the transfer portal.
Catcher.
This all, did I say center?
Yeah.
I've been watching too much basketball, or thinking too much about basketball. Star catcher, excuse me. This team, all this to say, this team is going to look significantly different. I think they have a lot of pieces to replace, especially on the mound. I mean, your battery is basically, yeah, has to be completely replaced. So we will, I think this is something to investigate as we move through the off season, just how these pieces are going to fit together and what the next recruiting class looks like in terms of who is coming in to build this puzzle, and redo some of this foundation that has really made up, a really strong core for Georgia Tech over the last 4 years.
Yeah, Eileen's gonna have a lot of work to do. The catching position is, I think, mostly solved with Reese Hunter. Her bat has some work to do, but she has. Oh, my throat's just killing me today. She has incredible pop, very good arm, and hit the game-winning home run that put us over Auburn this year. So she can hit for power when she wants, but I think her average can still go up some. But yeah, in terms of pitching, Dennis is gone and Dellman's gone, so. Lot of stuff to figure out there. Sophia Voiles, I think we can agreeably say without some a jump, will not be a starting ace in the sense that either Dennis or Nelman could produce at times. And Jaden Studebaker, I think, pitched once all season, maybe twice. So, yeah, this is we're gonna have to get something out of the portal. Maybe we'll recruit somebody. I don't know. But I think that's been knowing what Eileen has told me in the past and just how college softball is played, we're going to have to find some pitching. We're going to need to find it fast and hopefully more than one option.
Yeah, and I think especially early on next season, they'll get a chance to try out a lot of that freshman or that, even that sophomore talent and just sort of run through arms and see what's available. But at the end of the day, I think we can hash through a lot of that stuff, a lot of that prognostication about the roster when we get to it, right? So let's move on to the NCAA tennis tournament. Singles and doubles competition started today. We have a couple of results in early on the women's side. Carol Lee advanced to the round of 32 and straight sets 6-4, 6-4 over Mattel from UCF. And on the men's side, Andres Martin dropped straight sets to Texas's Braswell 2-6, 3-6. Unfortunate for Andres, especially considering he was the number six nationally ranked singles player per the ITA coming into this. He still has an opportunity to compete. Martin and McDaniel will start their doubles journey tomorrow versus Fenty and Young of Michigan. Kylie Bilchev is also in action on the women's single side. Her match was scheduled for 5 p.m. It has still not actually started because severe weather, because someone put this entire godforsaken tournament in Florida, if I remember correctly. Severe weather. Through the whole schedule into the can, they're still working through the backlog. So, I would, I will keep you updated on that. But for now, that match has not started. And I think the last time I checked Twitter, Georgia Tech's account said that her match would not start before 7:30 p.m., which we are about to come up on. Anything else for us to cover on the tennis side before we move on?
Sucks that Martin didn't get through as far. I think on the other just general idea of best hopes at winning a big trophy here, he was probably our next best shot behind golf. And so we'll see how that goes. Could be Carol Lee for all we know. Now she's into the round of 32. So, but Andres certainly. I mean, Andres has played some some players better than him. So it would have been a surprise if he even got to like the semis at this point. Just knowing the caliber of players that are out there. But yeah, first round loss could be better, but. I think he still had a good season, nonetheless, and hopefully can get things going against Michigan.
Yeah, just one more note. I thought that Tech had a women's doubles pairing, but I cannot find one right now. Another note on Bilchev's opponent, she's also from UCF. That is Arsenal from UCF. Both of them are tied at 31 in the ITA rankings. Carol Lee is at 15, and Lee defeated Marie Mattel of UCF, who is 37th. So high level competition on that side of the bracket for sure. Moving right along, the last major item of the day, Mr. Purdy, I hear you had some discussions with Coach Michelle Collier, Shelley Collier, about Georgia Tech volleyball's latest signing class.
I sure did. Should I do the intro to that or should you?
Give me a brief overview before we dive right into the interview, because we'll cut into it right here. Give me a brief overview of how this conversation went.
For the most part, we just covered well, I didn't know what her job was like in the spring, so I was like, tell me what you do in the spring since there's no games. And so get to learn a little bit about what being a D1 volleyball coach is like when there's no games, and even their practice games that happen as well, and then how the recruiting process has kind of changed post Julia Bergman and Mariana Brambilla opening a door from Brazil, and then the players that came in this year via that door. So it was a good little time, and they're gonna to slow down a little bit in May, and they'll slow down a little bit in the summer before things get kicked into gear because they are the first ones up in the 2023-2024 stretch.
Okay. And with that, we'll dive right in to Jack's interview.
To help us fill in some time on this lighter week, for the fourth, at least fourth time with me, we have Georgia Tech's head volleyball coach Michelle Collier here. Hey, thanks for coming. How's your spring so far? Is it has things at least cooled down a little bit since everyone's got out of classes?
Yeah, thanks for having me. And yes, it's been slowing down a little bit. They had a little bit of time to go home and see family before we kind of get rolling again this summer, and then getting geared up for preseason. So,
Does that at least afford you some more family time as well? Just because there's no games and the tra I imagine the travel's maybe a little bit less unless you're out recruiting m
yeah,
more.
no, there's a lot less. Yeah, May's a quiet period for us, so we're not allowed to do any off-campus recruiting. So we'll basically just kind of getting ready for June 15th is the first day we can talk to Rising Juniors, so
Gotcha.
2025 class.
Yep.
So that's our next big class with recruiting. So we're just getting ready for that. And then, I've been to a lot of soccer games and been able to watch my daughter a little bit, my
Oh,
son,
nice.
and kind of keep up. So it's been good. To just kind of be involved a little bit more as they're getting ready to be done with school here this week.
I do like that Georgia gets out of school in May and not after June when it's like too hot. You're supposed to be at a swimming pool in June, so I'm glad they do that. What does a standard spring semester look for you like? 'Cause I know y'all had the scrimmages, a couple weekends of scrimmages, but there's no big NCAA games happening like that. It's mostly a school semester for at least the athletes on your team. What is that? How does your time change and how you're spending it in the spring?
We definitely take some time to do some individual work in the beginning of the spring. So just kind of, focus a little bit, position specific stuff, individual stuff on little things we want to try to help them get better at. And then towards the end of the spring, when we go into our 20 hours and we're kind of similar to, the amount of time that we're practicing in the fall. And then we're playing a couple games this week, then it's great. It gives everybody a chance to really compete, to play. We don't get a chance to kind of use our whole roster during the fall and things like that. So this is a time where players can really kind of take advantage of having experience, and playing under pressure and competing against teams and things like that. So that has been really good for their development. I felt like we lost some key players in the fall, and so we had a lot of people step up and fill in some new roles and do that at a high level, which was awesome. It's nice to reconnect with our fans. O'Keefe was packed on both times that we were here competing. So when we played Florida and some other teams, and then when we played UGA, so it's been really cool to just kind of be able to reconnect with our fans and with the volleyball community. And just show them kind of the players that we have coming up, and then everybody that's kind of growing and learning and how we're developing as a program. And then now it's time to kind of continue that into the summer and fall.
Nice. What was your general assessment of those scrimmage games? Are you looking for something specific there, or is it just more of just making sure y'all are work have seen progress from the individual stuff you've worked on before those matches?
Yeah, I think all of the above. I mean, mainly, just seeing how everybody responds under those situations. I think it's important to get to know our players a little bit more to be able to help them through some situations that they have yet to experience if they haven't played certain roles and things like that. So just have them understand also what it takes at this level and what type of role, if you're somebody that people are serving all the time, like that is what's going to happen in matches. So how you work yourself out of that and things like that. And then middles connecting, or Bella and connecting with the new middles, different middles and things like that. So it's been I think it's been really good. I was really proud of everybody like this group. Obviously, I think our culture is people get to work, yeah. I mean, our girls are, they go into the weight room, they get it done. They come into the court, they get it done. And so I think the spring is a lot about really developing our new identity as a team when it comes to this group of people, right? We had a lot of leadership and other influences that left. And so how do we fill those voids? Who steps up, as being a voice, who is being leaders and how? So there's a lot of the off court stuff that happens in the spring as well. That it's important to kind of lay the foundation for what's about to happen in the fall. So a very critical time of the year for us, but I was really pleased with just our work ethic and, we got stronger and we became better volleyball players. So I'm excited to see where this keeps going.
Yeah, it sounds, can't ask for more, I guess, as a coach. Always want to see the progress there. I will mention, I was extremely thrilled that I got to see Julia Bergman during the UGA scrimmage because I missed the front part once, and I thought, I was like, I'm not going to see her again, no. And then she was, I'll be honest, she was out there a lot more than I thought she was going to be out there just because I was figuring you were trying to get the new people out there. But in terms of replacing her and Breland and Aaron and everybody, knowing that they were at such a high level, this might just be me speaking as just an armchair fan also at the same time of other teams and seeing like, oh, the Braves lose Chipper Jones or some big Hall of Famer. It's like, well, that's going to be impossible to fill that role. Does it ever feel like that? Or it would internal with the team, it's just like, nope, just next man up. We'll get whoever we get. And we're just going to go.
Yeah, no, I think it becomes a different combination of strength and weaknesses. It won't be the exact same. Right. Yeah. But we're bringing in new talent. I think that we're going to have a very talented group, solid group of players, a little bit younger than what we have been, but also very experienced. All these young players that are coming in have played with older players and have played volleyball for a very long time. So they will develop to be, just like them or even better than them. That's our plan, is that we keep one-upping them as hard as it looks. we want to make sure that we're continuing to do their jobs. But I think that those guys definitely were the best of the things that Georgia Tech is able to do for them. Yeah. I think that they really maximize their volleyball and some of them are going in to play and continue their careers and, others are going into their, professional careers and things like that. But I really felt like they maximized themselves. They pushed themselves. They grew. And so it's just a really cool moment. And it was one of the reasons we kept Julie out there is I felt like our fans wanted to have a little bit of her as well. And I just felt like it was only fair, let her play a little bit before she goes into the world here. And we'll be seeing her on TV a lot. But
I'm sure.
Yeah, just special players who are definitely going to be hard to replace, not only on the court, but off the court. But just really proud of who they became through the process and how much they pour of themselves into Georgia Tech volleyball. So forever grateful for those guys. And, that's our job as coaches is we only get them for a very short period of time. Yeah. And then they got to go on and we got to move on to the next group of people and focus and hope that we continue to help them, maximize their experience here.
Yeah. Let's look forward then to the new folks. I haven't found, I haven't done any scouting or like dug up any tape on these people. I don't know if I could in the first place, considering that there's these are from a bunch of different countries anyways. So all of this is based off what you say, and I will take your word for everything about all these players.
You can fact check me later.
All right, cool. Let's go one by one here. Let's start with, also apologies if I butcher any of these names. Afito Manyang of TCU, mm-hmm. middle blocker. So I assume experience there to add to the middle, played in the Big 12, so it's playing in a very competitive conference too. What were you seeing there?
Yeah, so Afito, she actually goes by Smiley.
Smiley,
so,
okay, got it.
Yeah, so Smiley is awesome. Just a great kid who I think it's going to fit in really well with our environment. Somebody that academically is super strong. Like, she already got her master's. She's coming in to get a second BS.
Oh, and wow, okay,
to do
nice.
Trips. So she'll be a part of a program that we called GradX for our grad transfers. And that's really exciting. I think that she really fits in to just the general environment of Georgia Tech, you know, and her goals are to play professionally once she's done. So she really felt like Georgia Tech could help her develop, you know, get a little closer look of international volleyball and the way that we train in our system. We really mm-hmm. felt like we could get her, help her get ready to that next level of her career. While also using her help to help us and add depth in that position, you know, so a player that's very physical. And we're super excited, just a nice kid, super energetic, great work ethic. And that wants to, you know, maximize her academic time here to take advantage of our network and who we're surrounded by and learn a little bit more on the professional side there while continuing to develop as a volleyball player and then getting ready to play professionally. So she's definitely going to be an immediate impact for us, and we're excited about that.
That sounds really cool. And all the reasons why people should come play any sport at Tech is the mixture of the professional in any direction you want to go. So that's cool.
Yes.
The rest of these players here are all freshman internationals. I assume I do follow you on Instagram, so I saw you were in Brazil a couple times recruiting some of these people. I do want to ask before we get into it. I do want to ask about just international recruiting in general, because I had talked to Julia before and she had mentioned that Mariana Brambilla had like kind of brought her into the fold on that one. But in general, nowadays, are you the one reaching out? Do you get contacted? How does that work for you right now?
I think both, but a lot of times we you know, we went to the World Championships last year, and then from there I went to a couple key tournaments in Brazil. Mm-hmm. We went to Turkey. So we were able to just keep an eye on upcoming talent around the world. You know, we're watching on TV, we're watching the European Championships. We're well connected with a network of coaches that know a lot of these players. Yeah. And I think that what Julia was able to do really opened a lot of doors for higher level international players. You know, that really kind of want to be able to do both things at a very high level and still understand that putting time into your academics doesn't really take time away from your development. If you're doing it at a high level and you're competing at the level of the ACC, you know, and so, yeah, so it's been, we just connect, and I went down to Brazil a few times we make sure that we try to see everybody play in person. Obviously, a lot of times we get videos, we get tips from players that we should check out, and then we try to schedule trips and go out there and watch them live and make sure that they're, you know, physically are going to be able to kind of compete at the level that we need them to compete at. Yeah,
that makes sense. Cool. That's now your job just sounds more fun. You just go to Brazil every once in a while. So let's start with Darren Suker from Fenerbahce, which I should have worn my Fenerbahce soccer jersey. I have one, but
look at that. You know Fenerbahce. There you go.
I do. I ironically have that and a Galatasaray jersey, so I can't wear both of them in front of the same person from Turkey, or else something will happen. But anyways, so a setter position. What do we got there with Darren?
Yeah, so Darren, you know, she was on the pipeline for the Fenerbahce, like, main team. Mm-hmm. Fenerbahce just won the Turkish league, but obviously a very traditional club, even from the soccer perspective, right? It's a club that really invests in athletics and sports. And so Her brother actually played from Grand Canyon University. So her,
oh, nice. Okay.
She kind of has a little bit of an idea. So she actually reached out to us when her brother was playing because she knew a little bit about the system, you know, so she kind of took ownership of her recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And felt like she very good student as well. And so she felt like Georgia Tech was a great place. And you know, heard a little, Coach Claudio coached in Turkey. So
gotcha.
A lot of coaches there know of him. And I think that our results and the things that we were doing here just kind of sparked her interest into being able to train with him as well, you know, and just kind of continue to play at a high level. So she's going to be great. Great kid. You know, she's athletic. She's has a good size. And she's coming in to really add more depth to that position, learn, you know, and grow. And it's somebody that wants to play this game for a very long time and at a very high level. So we're excited to get more minds like that as well. More players that really see volleyball beyond college, mm-hmm. You know, and into the next steps here. It's exciting to have that balance also.
And then we have another setter. I know I'm going to butcher this name. Eloise Suarez. Where am I going?
Yeah, Eloise.
Okay, gotcha. Uh-huh. So another setter going to be it. Also, these all have a bunch of different majors. I love how there's a big diversity. She's going to Sarah Scheller. Darren doing industrial engineering. Smiley's in a new program I didn't even hear of until 2 minutes ago. So
there you go.
All super cool. I saw on the press release, best setter at a national club tournament in 2022. So my question about her, and then more specifically, is when you see players that are winning awards like that, does that help you like refine who you're going to look at in the future, just see who's getting those award lists and then maybe use as a platform to start from and then branch out?
Yeah, no, I think we definitely want to try to, you know, I think if they're coming from a winning environment, I think that's helpful. And so usually those individual awards reflect in the environment that they're in and the mm-hmm. teams that they're playing for. So obviously it's helpful to have that, you know, and I think that Elo has been somebody that we've kind of had on our radar for a while. And we just she set for the Brazilian national team in the world's championship under 19. And she actually was on the list to go to the world championships this year. But unfortunately, those dates kind of mix with our playing dates. So she won't be able to participate in that championship. But she was on that group as well. So just a setter. She's been playing for a very traditional club in Brazil. She also trained with one of the main teams in the Brazilian Superliga as a third setter there, but she got trained by one of the best coaches in the world. I think he's a three-time Olympic champion. So just somebody that, and he's awesome with leadership and things like that. So she really comes from an environment that I think she had to grow a lot and mature. Similar to Darren, like all these players, they have to play with older players as well. Like they play their age group, but they also help with the senior team. And so they really get surrounded by Olympians and professional players and coaches that are doing this at a very high level. And so they have a higher, a lot of times they're pretty mature for their age as well, you know, because they're just used to being around those older players. So we're excited. We're excited for her to be here. She's, you know, just a strong kid, a great worker. So I think we're going to have some great depth in that position, mm-hmm. And for the future, you know, cause Bella is a senior. And so I think that, these guys really laid a foundation and have a little bit of time with not so much pressure, under the belt to really learn and grow and understand the game here in our system and kind of set the tone for the future.
Yeah, big year for Bella. Be the main setter, and then also make sure the rest of them are ready to go, I guess, along with you. So that'll be fun to see. Larissa Mendez, outside hitter, named best outside hitter at the U19 South American Championships. I know outside losing some depth there, an outside hitter eventually pretty soon. So I mean, also I saw like you recruited every position, so you got a whole team here. If you need a third team, I guess at this point. What'd you see out of Larissa?
Yeah, so Larissa is a you know, just a very physical player. She's actually playing right side, Right now, she's on. She is one of the two players that won't be here this summer because she's competing with the under 19 Brazilian team. She is going to go to the World Championships this July, end of July, beginning of August, over in Europe, and so she'll be playing. She'll be playing there, and again, similar to Darren and Eloise, just a player that she has played at Minas. Volleyball club, which is a very traditional volleyball club in Brazil. So she's really been surrounded. Her coach is from Italy and one of the greatest coaches as well in the Brazilian league. And so mm-hmm. she had just been she was the second opposite on that team. So the first one was the kid that's the starting opposite on the Brazilian national team. She's played around some really great players. Mm-hmm. And just really has grown and learned about the game. And then she's coming in to fill in some big shoes here. Yeah. But you know, she's got good size. She's about 6'4". And then just, good range of attacking. She can play outside or right side. Like lately she's been playing right side, but she can also play outside. Mm-hmm. So I think she just adds depth to that pin position for us. And again, somebody that has played and competed at a high level. So we're excited. And like I said, I think, you know, she's got a long career here. So it's yeah. nice to be getting that level of talent, and they're just ready. Like they have competed at a very high level, being as young as they are. So it's nice to have that because we'll be young, but we'll have a little bit of experience, yeah. A little coming than just any freshman. So
yeah a young team but with a really high floor of a young team, yeah, at the same time.
Yeah,
that's really cool, sure, to see. And then another national teamer, Victoria Demidova from Moscow. Mm-hmm. Policy, yeah, major to add to the diversity, and another outside hitter, so more depth there, I assume.
Yes, so yeah, Victoria, it was funny because Victoria, Larissa, and Eloise, they were all three of them were on the World Championships, the Youth 19 World Championships, mm-hmm. 2 years ago in Mexico. So they were all there at the same time. They didn't know they were all going to be teammates. World.
Look at that.
But Victoria, again, just comes from playing at a high level league, and playing with older players and somebody that it gives us a little different style of play. She's got a great serve. She's a good all around player, very strong. So she'll most likely she's an outside, so she's a little bit different than Larissa. But I think that she adds good depth there for that position with Tam and Leah and Bianca.
Yep.
So I think we have a good core group over there on the outside as well. And she's a good serve receiver, which will help, because Julia was a big part of our serve receive.
Yeah.
So that position has to play somewhat of a role in serve receive as well. And then just somebody that adds good size, a good blocker. It's just exciting that, we got that core group of kids coming in.
My next question was going to be what makes you excited about them, but it sounds like you're just over the moon to an extent here, just in terms of everyone's got the work ethic, everyone's got the size, which is becoming more important nowadays, seeing. Mm-hmm. Which team? I think it was Florida State when I saw them here. I was like, oh, they're not a small team. That could be a problem. So big stuff there. And I think one of the best parts of tech sports is just it's endlessly diverse in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Y'all are definitely now at the forefront of that. So that's just really cool thing to see. And you mentioned some of their roles going into the season. I imagine you have no sense of like what a lineup would be right now until everyone's really meshed together and play and that stuff like that. But I assume you imagine that they're going to have some pretty important roles when the time comes in August.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, we don't recruit anybody that we don't think can come in and have a big role, yeah, and play. So I think that we're going to have a lot of depth this year. I think that is one of the biggest things and maybe, in the past years, there hasn't been a lot of, like once the lineup is set, there hasn't been a lot of movement, but yeah. I really feel like this could be a year where we do some different things that we mm-hmm. haven't usually, but we gotta, we gotta get through preseason and we gotta figure it out who fits where and what makes us the best team possible. But I'm really excited. I'm excited about our just we have great options in every position.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be really cool. We do. We have another libero that signed early. She's from Texas, Zoe Winford.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I forgot about her.
Yeah, so she's coming, and she's going to add some good depth in that position as well. Just coming from a program that wins a lot, and so she comes from a good pipeline there in the juniors program. You know, so we're just really, really excited. I mean, yeah. I think that I can't wait to get going. You know,
yeah.
There are so many things that go into your mind and you're like, oh, we can do this. But you just kind of go and out. And we've been doing that since January. We're like, okay, this is, you know, we're going to be able to do this. And this person's going to be better at this. And, but obviously we, you know, we hope that they have a solid summer. We don't have too much of hands-on on them in the summer, but we know that our strength coach is going to get them ready and solid in that foundation. And, you know, they'll be doing open gyms and just kind of getting to know each other. I mean, six players. We're actually going to have seven newcomers. We can't talk about the other one yet because we got to get all that paperwork through. But you know, it's a pretty big number for a roster of 20. So there's a lot of changes, and we'll get moving. But just excited. I'm excited about just the depth and the quality of volleyball players, but also of people. You know, we have great diversity, people from a lot of different backgrounds. And I'm excited to just help each other kind of see the best out of one another and for us to go compete. We got a pretty solid schedule coming up, so it's going to be exciting.
That's good to hear. I'm excited to see some good teams come to Atlanta, and hopefully y'all beat the crap out of them. That's always the fun part.
Good plan, so. But we'll try.
Good to know. That's all I have. Thanks a ton for coming on. Cool. I hope your summer's
of
good.
Course.
See some good movies. Get some relaxation if you can.
Yes,
so.
Yeah, I will. Well, thanks for talking to us, and I appreciate it. Thanks, CJ, for putting it together.
Welcome back to Signs of the Southland as we wrap up on our episode for May 22nd. We like to end with Survivor, and Survivor itself seems to be ending tomorrow, isn't it, Mr.
Yes,
Purdy?
Yes, it is. And Carson's still there. Georgia Tech could win a national champion, a global championship in Survivor this week.
An international championship, you
say? We are going to be international champion. Well, it's international only in the fact that they finally just started allowing Canadians to participate in the show, so it's technically international now.
That's just the World Series, but for Survivor.
It really is. It's really just, it's the equivalent of winning the World Series. That's all it really is.
Which, you know, you slap World into it, and it's a global title. It's an international title.
Other countries do make their own version of the show, so they could do a real international version one day. It's not out of the question.
It's time for Survivor Champions League.
That would be incredible. They could do it. There's a way. It's not for this podcast, though. But, yeah, no, if you've been following my article series of the show, Carson's still in it. He's in Final Five. The show ends this week. They'll announce the winner and everything. It's a long, long episode, so it'll be – I'll be on pins and needles watching this guy because I've never watched a season with explicit interest from day one in a single player, just ever in general. And I've watched the show since I was five, and now the first time I do it, the guy makes the finale. So either way, I'm gonna have a fun time tomorrow night watching the show. Hopefully he does it, man. Hopefully he does it. That'd be really cool. He'd be
hang the banner. Just right next to the 1990 Final Four banner, Survivor 2023.
We should make
a banner. McCamish.
That'd be the most from the Rumble Seat thing ever. We just made a banner and hung it somewhere. Where should we hang it? Where should we hang the Survivor banner on campus?
Technically, that is most likely vandalism of some kind to hang a banner on a
probably
on a public campus. So I'm not sure that I can condone this. However, I would strongly encourage
what art project that would look like a banner would be best affixed to a brick building on campus.
let me offer this turn of phrase. I would strongly encourage the Georgia Tech, the Georgia Tech student government or the Georgia Tech Alumni Association, or pick your officially funded organization to, if in the off chance that he does win, put together a banner and hang it from somewhere on campus. Maybe the new student center or something. I think that would be that'd be pretty fun, especially considering he is a current student.
Yes. Yep.
That'd be a really nice touch. Also, he would know if he's won. So
Yeah, this is a
the
recent
show is
change.
already.
It's a recent change. They used to not reveal that until they did a live finale after the show had aired, and then because of COVID, they changed that and they tell them on location, like right there and then. So yeah, he knows. Yeah, he already knows if he won or lost. And someone in this final five has had to play coy. This is, I always wonder this in this new era. Someone knows they won $1 million. There are a lot of people that know that someone won $1 million, and they've got to keep that under wraps for almost 9 months.
I mean, it's like this is just a like an individual version of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
I
Like
guess,
it's the
but
exact
like,
same thing.
if you have a family, like if you have a family and you want $1 million, can you like just not get the $1 million for 9 months and not tell your family for 9 months, I just won life-changing money?
Probably. I'm sure that's either
This is
it's
so
either written into
sus.
the contract or they don't actually dispense it until
It
the
has to be
episode
something. I imagine
airs.
they wouldn't dispense it until now because then you have a major spoiler of like, oh, someone looks like they're living it up a little bit differently than their before photos did. So who knows? The
Who's to
magic of
say?
TV, the magic of TV still mystifies me.
Who's to say, really? I think that about wraps it up for us, Mr. Purdy. We are sadly down Mr. Grant this week, for he is on vacation. So he can't do the intro, so or the outro, excuse me. Why don't you do the honors and take us out of here?
Woohoo! All right. If you want to read our work, we're at fromtherumbleseat.com. 100 Days to Football begins tomorrow, and I've got the first opinion piece where I'll talk about my thoughts of just where my head's at as a Georgia Tech football fan. You can email us at fromtherumbleseat.com with any questions at any time. That can go in our mailbag. You can make suggestions about what you want us to cover if we're not covering a thing that you want to hear about. On Twitter, we are at fromtherumbleseat at FTRS blog. Jake is at JakeGrant98. I am at Jack Nicholas. You can find Section 103 also on Twitter at Section 103 and their website, section103.com. I'm putting our articles up on Facebook. I try to maintain our Instagram. It's kind of fallen by the wayside, but that's okay. It will be around. It's more of an on-location thing. And you can find this podcast, Science of the Southland, wherever the best and finest podcasts like this one are sold. And with that, thanks for listening. Carson, we hope you win $1 million tomorrow night. Go Jackets.